All right, welcome to the Free Stretch. For the first time in the history of this show, and not just the podcast, the Free Stretch, but even going back to when it was a radio show, it's the Bucks in the Super Bowl edition of the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton. Thank you for joining us. Obviously, a big week and big 2 weeks since the Bucks beat the Packers two Sundays ago. Here we are now. We've had a chance to really let it sink in. If you've had a chance to go to all the different festivities going on around town, hopefully you've been enjoying that. It's all only about to start picking up as it comes to a head at 6:30 on Sunday evening when the Bucks, I want to say, host the Chiefs. Technically, they're not hosting them. They're both neutral site teams, but it is at Raymond James Stadium, and it is a chance for the Bucks to win a world championship for the second time in their history and do it on their home field. So thanks again for being here. And, you know, I'm real sentimental in general, and that just goes as a general rule, no matter what the situation. But when things like this happen, like, you know, big-time stuff, like life event stuff, stuff you remember for years and years, I get even more sentimental. So I'm going to get a little sentimental on the show today. I'll try not to make it too schmaltzy for you. But there is a football game at hand, too, and I want to talk about that and all the things going on. So if you want to email me, I got a bunch of great emails last week when I talked about how I wanted to hear about what this meant for people, not just in terms of the Bucks winning or not winning, but just what it meant looking back through all the years of following the Bucks. And I'm going to go into some of those emails on the show. And yet, you know, you look at this game, and what I really want to talk about is how I think the Bucks can win the game or what they'll have to do to win the game. And we will get into that as well. Email me, though, if you want to, anytime, any place. You can always reach me at bobbygameday@yahoo.com. That's BobbyGameDay, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. Or you can get me on Twitter at bobbygameday. The Free Stretch, like it always has been on this website, is brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. It is the best place, whether you're looking for a brand new car, a pre-owned car, and not just Ford's, although Ford's their main thing. They got tons of stuff over there. If you check out the website, it's B, well, it's obviously, you know how to spell Bill. It's C-U-R-R-I-E is how they spell Curry. BillCurryFord.com, and check them out. All the inventory is there. Go see them in person, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry, where they've always been. And either way, you'll have a chance to get yourself into a vehicle. Again, whether it's new or pre-owned or whatever, it doesn't matter. You get the nationwide unlimited lifetime warranty. Your car is covered if it has engine trouble, even if it's a few years from now. If you bought it at Bill Curry Ford, you can bring it back in and they'll have a look. You get free service for the first year with the oil changes. 10 years roadside assistance comes with any car you buy. And if you're not looking to go in person, if you're not comfortable with doing that, given everything going on, they will bring you a car if you just want to test drive one. They'll bring it to your home or office or wherever. And if you end up making the purchase, they'll deliver it right to your door. You can do everything from home using the website or go see them in person. Either way, Bill Curry Ford, serving this area for 60 years now. And you can check them out on the website, BillCurryFord.com. So let's get to the nuts and bolts stuff first of all. Injury report. Everybody on the Bucks, and I'm recording this on, like I usually do, on Thursday in the late morning, so I don't have the Thursday practice report yet, but for Wednesday's practice report, everybody was out there in some capacity, except for Jason Pierre-Paul, and he always takes a maintenance day in the middle of the week. He's fine. But all the people that we have question marks about, Antoine Winfield, limited participation, but he was out there and actually said, quote, "The ankle's feeling good, and I'm going to play the game," end quote. So he should be good to go. Antonio Brown with the knee, limited participation, but he was out there. He should be okay to go. The biggest question mark is probably Jordan Whitehead with the shoulder, and he was out there in limited participation, but he's still one to keep an eye on. But it looks like everybody should be fine. And the Super Bowl bye week, like I say, sometimes people complain about it a little bit and say there's too much buildup and just play the game already. But you really wouldn't want, especially in a game like this, both from the standpoint of the players for their own personal careers and their experiences, to have to miss this game with injury. And just from a competitive standpoint, I wouldn't want to see on either team a key player missing if they didn't absolutely have to be missing. And so that extra week does help a lot of guys get healthy and you get as close to a full bore as you can get with either team. And that's the way it should be. So, you know, the Chiefs do have their left tackle, Eric Fisher, out. We're going to talk about that on the show. But as far as the Bucks go, everybody should be fine. Everybody's ready to play, or at least getting ready to play, and by the time Sunday at 6:30 rolls around, it looks like there shouldn't be any major injury issues. As far as the weather, again, more nuts and bolts stuff. It depends on who you ask, but the weather on Sunday, it's not going to be bad, but the possibility of showers exists. There's a front going over Florida. Some places I've checked, like I know Weather Underground, has the rain being finished in the early afternoon or even late morning. Weather Bug has the exact opposite. The rain picks up in the afternoon when the Super Bowl is going to be starting or the early evening. I like the weather guys we have in town. I'm a big Paul Delgado guy. I'm a big Dennis Phillips guy. And both of them say they're cautiously optimistic that the rain will be done by kickoff. McClure over at Bay News 9 doesn't get as much publicity. He's another good one. Like him a lot, Brian McClure. So it depends on who you ask. And really, it's just not, at this point, 72 hours out, still not certain. But there is the possibility of some rain. I think it'll end up being okay, just gut feeling. But again, I'm not a weather guy, and I'm completely just saying that because that's how I feel. It's not based on anything but the information I've read. But it shouldn't be too windy. Temperatures will be fine. It'll be in the 60s. It's going to be very nice as long as it's not raining. And we'll just have to wait and see what it actually is. The attendance will be 25,000. They upped that a little bit off of 22,500 from before. There's going to be another 30,000 cardboard cutouts in the seats. And then there'll be a few actual empty seats, although they'll mix it up. You won't be able to notice it much on TV. And that's the situation there. As far as the cannons go, I know people were very, very curious about what the situation is with the cannons. Again, it's the Bucks' home stadium, but it's not a home game. The Bucks, and this is what I was able to gather from some NFL reporters who were inside on this, the Bucks pushed to be able to use the cannons like a regular home game, like to fire them after touchdowns and things like that. Chiefs resisted it. It is a neutral site game, so I do understand the decision which was made, and that is that the cannons will not be used during the game because, again, it's not a Buck home game, and I think in the true spirit of a neutral site game, I agree with that. They will have cannon fire during starting introductions if that matters to you, although it won't be the real cannons. It'll be a recording. And then if the Bucks do win, they say they can fire some more after that. Either way, that's fine. Some people say, well, why not just fire it for both teams? And then it's still even. I think it'd be weird to have the cannons going off for an opposing team. So I'd rather have no cannons at all, personally, than hearing the cannons fire when somebody other than the Bucks scores at Raymond James Stadium. It just wouldn't be right. It's fine that they're doing it this way. So those are all the nuts and bolts things having to do with the game on Sunday, and if there's any updates or anything changes at all, the best thing you can do is keep it dialed into joebucksfan.com, the website itself, or follow him at joebucksfan on Twitter, which I know a lot of you probably already do, or even if you're not on Twitter, you can still check the Twitter feed, because you will not miss anything at all, period. If you had one place, Joe Bucks Fan is it, and you're covered. They will have every update, they've covered the game from every angle, all those things. So here's what I want to talk about with the actual game, because we all remember the game the first time around when the Chiefs came in here in November. It's the last game the Bucks lost, in fact, and Tyreek Hill went completely nuts. The Chiefs went up to a quick 17-0 lead. It was 27-10 at one point. The Bucks got two touchdowns in the second half to cut it to 27-24, but could not get closer than that and lost the football game. In that game, though, the story was Tyreek Hill just shredding them, just going nuts, deep balls and things like that. So, the natural inclination is, okay, well, how do we not let that happen again, and what changes do we have to make? And that's just human nature, right? Something bad happens, you want the bad thing to not happen again, so you probably want to do things differently to ensure that not happening. Here's the thing. And I was reading a couple of, articles about the game, reading some of the advanced stats guys, which I like to read, and some of you were into that, some of you aren't. But, I was thinking about it. If you look at what happened in the first game, aside from that game, this season, the Chiefs actually had some of their worst offensive outputs. And even in that game, the Bucs defense did tighten up in the second half, and even during times when the Chiefs were still trying to score. But if you look at that game, and the season as a whole, the Chiefs had some of their worst offensive games in games where teams tried to make them beat them deep. And the instinct a lot of teams had against the Chiefs is to get conservative and to, close off the big plays and make the Chiefs be methodical instead of explosive. But the Chiefs have a lot of experience because most teams have tried that against them, and they tear people apart doing that too. And if it is the most recent example is the AFC Championship game against the Bills, and they just dink and dunk the Bills to death. So it's not like there's some virtue in just saying, okay, we're going to shut down the big play, we're going to take away these explosive things, and you know we're just going to try and keep things within reach. And you saw with Buffalo. Buffalo couldn't do it, and most teams couldn't do it, and the Chiefs are good at doing it that way too. I actually think it might be better, even if it sounds weird, to take a similar tack as you did the first time, even though it was not good. You know, here's the thing about longer passes and the deep part of the field. There's much more variance. So if you're playing a team, and I'm not saying the Chiefs overall are superior, they might be, but Chiefs offense versus any defense, our defense or anybody else's, the defense is going up against the superior force, right? The Chiefs offense is superior to any defense, really, as we've seen. So when you're going up against a superior force, isn't variance your best friend? Isn't it a good idea to try and say, maybe, hey, let's go out there with the same type of approach and hope it goes better this time? Because it may go better, it may not. But if we lay back and let them stay underneath us, it may not happen as fast, but we kind of know what will happen. There's not as much variance when you're letting a team just work the flats, work the short yardage. And they may not score 80, 90-yard touchdowns or 70-yard touchdowns, but you know what's going to happen. Whereas with the deep stuff, what happened in the November game against the Chiefs could well happen again. Or maybe it doesn't. Maybe you have more success. And here's the thing about this game. What's the biggest mismatch in the Bucs' favor? I mean, there's not that many mismatches in this game, period. There are others that are mismatches in favor of the Chiefs, of course. But what's the biggest thing the Bucs have going for them, do you think? Because I'll tell you what I think it is. I think it's the Bucs' pass rush against the Chiefs' offensive line, especially without Eric Fisher, who was not missing in the first game, and he will be missing now. And so if you allow the Chiefs to dink and dunk and kind of lay back, you know, they're going to be getting the ball out quicker anyway, and you're kind of neutralizing the only thing you have going for you. I think it might be better to just try and say, we're going to get after Patrick Mahomes. And listen, Patrick Mahomes is one of those guys. I'm not saying there are any good approaches to defending the Chiefs. That might be the final answer. Maybe on Monday of next week, we're talking about how there just wasn't a good idea because there are no good ideas. Patrick Mahomes against pressure, he's not as susceptible against it as a lot of teams are, a lot of quarterbacks are, because he's so good outside of the pocket. We've seen him make throws with, you know, three defenders wrapped around his waist. I mean, he can do those things, and it kind of neutralizes the pressure. Even if the pressure is getting there, Mahomes can just do crazy things outside of the pocket that most quarterbacks can't do. But if you get out, you know, if you get after Mahomes and you make him start doing some things, you know, a little bit more hurriedly than he'd prefer to, can the Bucs win this game if the Chiefs hit four touchdown passes, but the Bucs also get two interceptions? Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's going to take 30-something points probably to get it done, right? So, yeah, you might give up a few home runs, and you might give up some big plays, but you might get a couple picks, too. Or you might get a sack, fumble. I mean, I don't know, just something like that. Stuff like that's going to have to happen. And if the Bucs' pressure doesn't do anything in this game, the Bucs aren't winning the game anyway. So I might just cut the dogs loose and say, I might just go full YOLO, just unzip our fly and put our balls right out there on the table and say, yeah, we're going right back into the well, okay? And it didn't work out too well in the first game. We're counting on it maybe working out better in this game. But if you get conservative and you lay back and you just try and, you know, mitigate what the Chiefs can do, I don't know. I feel like that's a losing proposition. I feel like that's just kind of death by paper cut. And I feel like it might be better. Hey, go tell Carlton Davis. Say, hey, dude, I know what happened in November, okay? Don't worry about it. Get right back after his ass. Stick him. See what happens. And hey, listen. Could it work? Absolutely, maybe. Sure. Could it lead to one of the most explosive offensive outputs in the history of the Super Bowl? Yeah, maybe that too. I don't know. You know, I don't know what's going to happen. But that to me is the biggest matchup of anything in this game, looking ahead to the game, is the Chiefs' offense, and particularly their passing offense, because we know how good the Bucs are against the run, and it doesn't matter. Chiefs don't need to run the ball that well to win. But what can the Buccaneers do against the Chiefs' passing game? That's even more important than what the Bucs can do against the Chiefs when the Bucs have the ball, in my opinion. And again, I'm thinking about it and thinking about it and thinking about it. And I think high variance is what you want when you feel like you're a little outgunned, because there's a few things that could happen that can go your way. And the less variance there is, the more certainty that in the end, what appears to be the superior firepower will win. And the Chiefs do have the two best receiving threats in this game with Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. Although I'll say this, I mean, the Bucs have probably numbers 3 through 6 or 7. So it's not like the Bucs are slouches either. But, and here's another thing. There's been, I had a stat here. I wanted to look it up. Let me look it up real quick. Okay, here's the stat. Since 1970, there have been 17 examples of a receiver who had 180 yards of receiving or more against a team, and then faces that same defense in the playoffs that year, which is what Tyreek Hill's doing versus the Bucs this year after he had a bazillion yards in the first game, playing him now here in the Super Bowl. And it's actually encouraging in the second game. The regular season totals, the teams went 13-4 in those 17 games, and the player in question averaged something like 208 yards a game. And then you look at the playoff rematch, the team with the receiver that had the big game in the first game is 10-7 in the second game, and that same receiver averages 62 yards in the rematch. Now, obviously, like I just said, teams see something happen that's bad, they ensure that the bad thing won't happen again the next time around. So I feel like it might be more of a Kelce night on Sunday than a Tyreek Hill night. Of course, it could be both. But like I said, man, I would dare them to beat the Bucs the same way they did the first time and hope it doesn't happen again. And I don't mean necessarily hope. I mean, you have to do things to make it not happen again. Hope is not a plan. But I think the Bucs' best tack might be that. I really do. And we'll see what they end up doing. We'll see how aggressive they end up being on defense. But it's like the saying goes, fortune favors the bold. Or no risk it, no biscuit. You know, no risk it, no biscuit doesn't have to just be an offensive term, okay? That can be a defensive term, too. And so, you know, analytics has borne this out. I mean, this is one thing analytics has done, if nothing else, in football. It has kind of put credibility, mathematical credibility, behind the idea that being aggressive is good, that playing not to lose doesn't do it, that bringing the fight to your opponent and trying to make things happen as opposed to hoping other things don't happen is the way to go. So, and that's what I would do if I was the Bucs. And I'm not a defensive coordinator, and I haven't watched the hours and hours and hours of film that I'm sure Todd Bowles and all the other Bucs defensive coaches have been watching leading up to this game. I'm sure they've got several ideas, and we'll see what they are. But I mean, I just think you can't be passive against this Chiefs defense, or excuse me, Chiefs offense. Even though your instincts might be, oh God, these guys are really good. This is like holding a stick of dynamite. We got to be really careful with these guys. I don't know. Maybe not, you know? Honestly, maybe not. If you're looking for encouraging numbers, here's another one. The 2020 Buccaneers at plus 90 points for a fourth quarter point differential for the whole season have the highest fourth quarter scoring differential since the 2013 Patriots. So it's not only the best in the NFL this year, but it's the best in the NFL in 7 years. And you combine that with the fact that the Chiefs are the only team in the past couple of seasons to allow more than 40% of their opponents' points in the fourth quarter. Now, a lot of that probably has to do with the Chiefs having bigger leads in games and just kind of, you know, not that they're not trying, but teams are trying to come back on the Chiefs, teams are being more aggressive. I understand that, but still, that's not nothing. Bucs score a lot and do well in the fourth quarter, and the Chiefs don't. And so, if this is a close game in the fourth quarter, does that matter? I don't know. You know, if the Chiefs are up by 17 like they were in the first game, and then the Bucs win the fourth quarter by 2 touchdowns, who cares? The Bucs still lose. But, you know, in a closer game, we'll have to see. But I really think, you know, the key is, even though you're going to give up a few, and don't go into this game thinking, oh my God, every time the Chiefs complete a touchdown pass, because the Chiefs are going to complete touchdown passes, okay? Like I said, they might get 3-4 touchdown passes, but if you combine that with a couple of turnovers, the Bucks can still win a game like that. So don't freak out. It's about absorption, okay? We got to absorb the Chiefs' offense, really. And then, obviously, it'll be Tom Brady and company's chance on the other side of the ball to fight fire with fire. And that goes back to what I talked about last week on the first down running plays and the things like that, which I hope, that's my biggest hope for when the Bucks have the ball, that they do a little bit better to mix it up from that aspect of things, because the Chiefs, their first and second down pass rates are huge. They lead the league. They're throwing the ball all over the place. And that's what you're supposed to do when you have the best quarterback in the league. It's like poker. If you have the best hand, you're supposed to bet more money. And you want to get money in the pot because you're holding the cards. They're holding Patrick Mahomes. They should be throwing on first or second down. But we got Tom Brady, and yet we're a little more formulaic with it, as we like to run on first down, usually not successfully. In fact, the Bucs have the highest rate of getting 3 yards or less on their first down running plays. I think it's 51%. The Steelers were the only other team over 50. And yet we do it a lot. And then we get into second down, where we are one of the leading teams as far as passing on second down. That's because we're in second and longs a lot. But if those passes are incomplete, you're behind the chains on third down. So I really want to see the Bucks. I'm not saying you can't run on first down ever, ever, ever. But I really want to see them mix in the play action more and do the things that you need to do to give yourself a chance on first down, because there's no virtue in making it second and eight just to say you ran the ball. There really isn't. And an incomplete pass on first down isn't really much different than that anyway. It's just 2 yards. So that's what I'll be watching as far as things go in the game. But you know how these things are. I mean, it's one football game. There are so many variables. There are so many possible heroes besides just the obvious ones. There are so many ways a game could turn. If I told you with the Bucks and Raiders in 2002 that Dexter Jackson was going to be the MVP, you would be like, "What? You know, we got John Lynch, we got Warren Sapp, Simeon Rice, Rondi Barber, all these guys." And, you know, you never know who's going to make a play. And the Bucks have had lots of guys stepping up and making plays on defense over the course of the playoffs. It hasn't just been any one or two guys. Obviously, Devin White's been huge, but there's been a bunch of them. And it's going to take something. Let me say this. I think it'll take a better effort than any of their regular season wins to win a game like this. And if you look at the regular season, all 16 games, the loss to the Chiefs, just as far as the sheer numbers go, if you look at advanced stuff, that game rated like number 12 out of 16. So they didn't play that well in that game. They still only lost by 3. That's encouraging. It'll obviously take a better effort than that, but I think it'll take a much better effort than even a lot of the really good efforts in the regular season. But that's the way it should be. It's the Super Bowl. You're playing the best team in the league besides yourself, that you think. And if you beat them, you are the best team in the league, and they have a chance to do that. Now, I wanted to talk in the second half of the show here about some of the emotional stuff that comes along with this, because I'm not going to go all through the whole thing. You've heard it a million times. You know that if you've known this show, you know the story. I was born in 1980. My mom was pregnant with me during the 1979 Bucks season, and in fact, she went to many of the games that year, including the 79 NFC Championship with me in utero, including the opening playoff game against the Eagles, including the game that clinched the playoffs, the 3-0 win over the Chiefs in an absolute torrential downpour at the old Tampa Stadium. Neil O'Donoghue hit that field goal. And then as I was born and grew up, you know, through my toddler years, pretty much since I've been able to remember anything, going back to about 1985 or so, I remember the Blizzard game in Green Bay. That was 85. And I've got at least some memories of every single Bucks season since then. And I have not missed a Bucks game at all since then, whether I was there in person or watching on TV. Or for you real old school Buck fans, you remember blackouts and having to listen to it on the radio with Mark Champion before Gene Deckerhoff. So I go back through all that, and I grew up down the street from the stadium. I was born across the street from the stadium. I went to high school down the street from the stadium at Jesuit. That little area where the stadium is, where Jesuit is, where Women's Hospital is, and over down Columbus Drive toward my old house, you could draw like a 2-mile circle, like a 2-mile radius there, and that's pretty much like the cradle of civilization for my life. Like my grandmother lived in that same circle where I used to go. I mean, like literally like 80% of my life you could contain inside of that circle. So that's the real greaseball part of this, the old country. I go way back. I know a lot of you guys do too. So I asked people on the show last week, to email me, and a lot of you did. It was really cool. I actually was not expecting the emails that I got, but a lot of you took the time to email, and I was really thrilled to read through all the different things people wrote about their experiences as a Bucks fan. And I got emails from people who are here in town, like me, all through the years. I got people who are Bucks fans from out of town. And I'll read a couple of excerpts of them. But what really meant the most to me was, you know, it hit me when I was reading all these. I mean, I hope the Bucks win. We all do. But at the end of the day, it actually doesn't even matter if they win or lose on Sunday. Because what are we going to be doing on Monday? No matter what, or maybe on Tuesday if they win. But what are we going to be doing next week after this game is over, no matter what happens in the game? We're going to be what? Looking forward to the 2021 draft, looking forward to the 2021 season. There's always a next Bucks game. There's always a next season. There's always something to look forward to. And that's really what it's all about. And like I always say, this is the 45th season of Bucks football. This is the second Super Bowl, okay? And a chance to be the second Super Bowl win as well. You can't be a fan if you're in it just for the championships, because they don't happen that often. And that, nobody, I mean, besides the Patriots of the past, like, 20 years, it's just not a way things are. And even division championships, they come and they go. All these games, they come and they go. It's about the experience of being a fan. It's about the anticipation of looking forward to the next game. It's about getting together with friends. I got an email here from Rob Lewis, who's been listening to this show for a long time. And he goes back to my radio days, too. I love Rob. And he sent me an email. I won't read the whole email. But he talked about how, you know, after his dad died in 1974, he moved to Florida with his mom. And he was a big Bills fan. He was only 9. And then we got awarded the Bucks in 1976. He talked about how when he was 12, they played their first game. How in high school, he worked at a restaurant for $55 a year season tickets. He used his money from the restaurant job to buy season tickets in 1978, which is, I mean, it's the same thing. I remember doing that. I worked at Adventure Island up there next to Busch Gardens. I used to live down the street from there. And I remember the first year I got Bucks season tickets was the first year I had a driver's license, because me and my buddy Drew didn't have to ask to go to the game anymore. We could just go on our own. We had, you know, I had an old Pontiac Grand Am. I think we paid $150 for season tickets, which came out to $15 a game. It was 1997, which was the perfect year to buy season tickets, if you remember. And that started a streak of 100 and some odd straight games I went to all the way through 2008. I did not miss a single game. And Rob talks about that. He talks about those same, he's got like a group of three other friends, and those same four guys are going to be getting together this weekend and watching the game together. And one of them had a chance to go to the game, had tickets, and turned them down because he wanted to watch it with his buddies instead. That's a beautiful thing. I thought that was cool. I got an email from Neil, who's another listener. He talked about going to Bucks games in the Sombrero. He's about my age, too. About how in the 80s and 90s, I mean, it was 14 straight losing seasons. And we didn't have the Lightning or the Rays back then, so the Bucks kind of were Tampa sports. And so the losing didn't just define the Bucks; it defined Tampa Bay. And I remember that. I remember, and he talks about kids at school making fun of him. And I remember that, too. I remember, like, being a kid. And I had a close group of friends who, to this day, again, I will see them both this weekend. And they were Buck fans. But a bunch of other kids in school would be 49ers fans or Cowboys fans or whatever the flavor of the month. You know how it was. All these bandwagon kids. Because the Bucks sucked back then. And I never cared about that. And I always say on this show, whenever I talk about this, I'm actually glad. Not that I, you know, wanted them to lose at the time. But I'm glad I grew up with a losing favorite football team, and then the Lightning, too, weren't very good at first. And so all through, like, the 80s and 90s, none of my teams were ever that good, because it taught me loyalty, and it taught me, you know, to stick with something through thick and thin. I don't know if I'd have the same character, and some of you may not value my character very highly anyway, but I don't know if my character, like, what if the Bucks were, like, the 80s and 90s version of the Patriots these last 20 years? What kind of kid would I have been? Would I have been different? What kind of person would I be now? You know, maybe I think too much about this stuff. Maybe I put too much credence in it. But I wonder about that sometimes. It would have changed my outlook on things and changed the way my personality developed. But I wouldn't trade it for anything. You know, back then when I was a kid, I wanted them to win. It was disappointing when they didn't go to the playoffs or whatever. But it didn't bother me that much because I was just a kid and I was just happy to go to the game. And I loved watching the games. or listening to him on the radio with my mom or my dad and my uncles and my grandparents. I mean, we'd always make a big deal out of every Bucks game. And that was always fun for me. And it didn't bother me that much back then whether they won or lost. And so I hang on to that even now. And the memories, I mean, they're all great memories. And I wasn't jaded back then like I am now. I mean, anybody who's older, you get like if the Bucks went through a stretch like that now, I'd probably just be cursing them out every week and talking about how awful it is. That's kind of a beautiful thing, though, because when you're a kid, you're just happy. I just love football. I love football on TV. I love the Bucks. I love those two or three times a year when my mom or dad would say we're going to the game. And that was always enough for me. And like I said, that's kind of, you know, nobody's that innocent forever, but nothing but great memories of those times. So Neil's memory reminded me of my memory, and I appreciate the email from Neil. Got one from Chris, who's in Toronto, from the perspective of someone who's not a Tampa person. And he talked about all the memories he have. He says, Bobby, you have no idea the difference that you see when you're a fan out of town as opposed to somebody who's in Tampa and what it's like. And he says, the biggest thing for me has been the memories for me at home, and currently that's Toronto, watching the games. He says, I don't think you can fully appreciate my fandom and what it means to me not living in Tampa. He says, you can go cheer with people on the streets, which we did last week, by the way, after the NFC Championship game. He says, I can't. My friends are all fans of different teams and have always ragged on the Bucks, and it heartens you a little bit. Imagine living in a city and people ragging on Tampa and the Bucks. You lose your mind hearing people cheer for Buffalo, and in his case, that's the closest NFL team, and it feels like everyone's against you. It's not as fun, but it's so gratifying when you win. And I know he'll be up there in Toronto watching the Super Bowl this weekend. And Chris, always a loyal listener, by the way, thanks so much for the email and thanks so much for listening. And then a buddy of mine, Greg Carroll, who's I go back to a Jesuit high school, so he's the same age as me, and he's a guy who has the same experiences as me growing up as a Buck fan. And he talked about the same things I've talked to you about, remembering all the way through the 80s and 90s and how things were. And we both went to high school, a Jesuit down the street from the stadium. I remember going over there with my buddy Drew after school sometimes or after football practice, because the old stadium would just be sitting there and it would always be open. Like, it's not like it is now where there's security. Like, you can't just go to Raymond James Stadium and go out and run on the field and throw a football around. Like, you'll get arrested, right? But at the old Tampa Stadium, even as late as the 90s, I mean, this isn't something like going back to the 70s or something, all the way through its existence, you could go on like a Tuesday or Wednesday afternoon, even in a game week, and the field would be all painted up for the game, and there'd just be a wide open gate, and you'd walk in, and we'd bring a football, and we'd throw the ball and run routes and do all these things at Tampa Stadium. And I used to love doing that. And, you know, we could walk there from Jesuit or even just drive our cars, you know, half a mile down the road there. And, you know, those are the types of things that when I'm watching the game on Sunday, I'll be thinking about those things all throughout the whole 3 hours. Like, you know, kind of like that movie For Love of the Game, anybody who saw that with Kevin Costner, where he's pitching in what ends up being his final game, and he's actually throwing a perfect game, but the whole game he's just thinking back to different parts of his life and his career. He doesn't even realize he's throwing a perfect game. Like, that's what it'll be like watching the Super Bowl. I always have these montage flashbacks during the big moments, and I think about all the other things. So I got to clear my head or something before the game on Sunday. But it's going to be really cool. There's going to be a stealth bomber flyover, which if you live anywhere in South Tampa or West Tampa or even up toward Carrollwood, you know, you can go outside probably and see it go by right before the game during the national anthem. For the 25,000 people in attendance, of course, you're going to get your temperature checked, which, can you imagine a more high-pressure temperature check than that, by the way? Like, I think if you're 100.4 or higher, that, you know, for COVID, anybody running a little bit warm. Like, imagine having your Super Bowl ticket in your hand and walking up to the gate and be like, hey, yeah, I'm going to, like, go to the Super Bowl now, so here's my ticket. And they're like, oh, cool, hang on, let me just take your temperature. And then it's like 100.6. And they're like, okay, well, look, you need to just turn around and just go home. You're not allowed to come in here. And you're like, yeah, but I have a ticket. Like, no, it doesn't matter. You can't go because your temperature is 100.6. I mean, I think I might drive to the game and get one of those like things you keep in your freezer with the blue gel, like the ice pack, and just keep that on my forehead. Or I'd find out how they're doing the temperatures, whether it's the wrist or the forehead or whatever it is. And I would just, you know, like you see a pitcher after a start with the ace bandage with the ice packs on his shoulders. I would do that to whatever part of my body they're using to take the temperature. So if it's a forehead temperature check, I would just wrap a few ice bags around my forehead while driving to the game, and maybe just right before I walk in the gate, just discard them in the nearest trash can. And then they come in and check your temp, and you're like 88.5. I go, you're clinically dead, but you're not over the number, so you're in. Go ahead and go into the game. But I would not want to take a chance on that if you're one of the lucky few who is going to the game on Sunday. So, folks, here we are. The next time I talk to you one way or the other, this whole thing will be done with. And like I always say, I mean, you know, we get wrapped up in the hype of the game itself, but I always get a little bit sad for the Super Bowl, just like I get a little bit sad for the college football national championship game, because it is the last, in this case with the Super Bowl, it really is the last football game for 7 months. I hope the next time we do this in 7 months, it's a completely normal football season with sold out crowds, tailgating, people having a few too many beers, all the things you associate with football, whether it's in person or on TV. You know, obviously that's what I hope for the next time around. But we've got one more game, we think, under these conditions. And it happens to be a chance for our team to win a world championship. So, just like I was saying, man, it's more than just win or lose, okay? Make it about the experience. You know, and this is cool, one of the biggest cool things about it, you know you're going to remember where you watched this game, who you watched it with, what happened for years. Unlike most games where you watch them and then maybe a few weeks later you've already forgotten about it, you will remember this. Not just a month or now, not just a year from now, 5, 10, 15, 20 years, however long you're lucky enough to be around, we're all going to remember those 3 hours on Sunday. So enjoy it. Try and get together with friends, especially, I mean, if there's any game where it's a good chance to maybe call somebody up that you used to be someone who you watch games with and you haven't done that in a while, do it for this one, because this is one where, you know, you should be with people you love if you can. And either way, enjoy it. Enjoy the experience. There is nothing, for those of you that weren't around in 2002 as Bucks fans, there is nothing like seeing your team play in the Super Bowl for the first time. So for you youngins out there who haven't had a chance to do that, that's going to be really cool. And either way, man, think back, because this one goes all the way back to 0-26. It goes back to John McKay being in favor of his team's execution. It goes back to the 1979 team breaking through. Leroy Selman playing in the NFC Championship game. It goes back to 14 straight losing seasons, 5-2 under Sam Wyche. It goes back to the 1997 team, the final year in the sombrero, breaking through and making the playoffs. Bert Emanuel, Tony Dungy, Sean King, Trent Dilfer, John Gruden, finally winning a Super Bowl. Sapp, Brooks, Barber, Lynch, Raheem Morris describing his team as youngery. Greg Schiano, toes on the line, or rigging the captain's election so Josh Freeman wouldn't win, allegedly. Mirsa, remember Mirsa? All these things, like this is, like, I go through all the years. All it goes to the old people and all the old West Tampa houses across Himes there on Lincoln and Leroy and Dewey and all those streets where they park in cars, and they'll be doing it again on Sunday for whoever is there. Jameis Winston, the awful uniforms we had for a few years there, all through Bucks history, all these things sprinkled through, you know, and that here we are. Super Bowl 55, a chance for the Bucks to win a second world championship. They'd be only the second team, by the way, to have multiple Super Bowl wins with no losses if they're able to pull this off. The Ravens are also 2-0 in Super Bowls. That's either here or there, but it's a stat I thought I would throw in. So with all that said, I want to give my sincere thanks to all you guys. Doing this show, you know, I used to do my sports talk show. I was on 1470 way back in the day with former Bucks Scott Brantley. Then I was on 1010, did a little stint at 620. So I was at all the local radio stations, and I loved it. And I don't do live sports talk radio anymore. And there's it's not the same as doing a podcast, radio and podcast. It's similar, though. I miss the red light going on. I miss taking calls. I miss some of the things about it. But being able to do this show every week, I don't miss it as much because I get to talk to you guys. So I appreciate all you guys listening. I appreciate all the emails that I always get. We're going to be going year-round just like always, so no matter what happens, we'll be back next week with our show. Thanks to you. You guys make it fun, and you guys make me feel more attached to the Bucks being able to do this than if I just sat at home and watched the games and didn't have anybody to talk to on the podcast every week. Thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford, who've been behind this show from the very beginning on JoeBucksFan.com. Cannot thank them enough. Of course, the Joes themselves for giving me this platform and letting me get in front of all of you. thanks to them as well. It's time, all right? You got this show sitting out there for about 72 hours, so maybe you're listening on Thursday or Friday or right up until game time. We're here for you. I'll record another one next week. But either way, like I said, no matter what happens, we'll be getting ready for 2021 after this. But we have a chance for something really, really cool to happen on Sunday before that. I will talk to you on the other side. I think the Bucks have a good chance to win this game. I think they need to take some chances to do it. And I think they have the ability to do that. We'll see. In the meantime, wherever you are, just like always, be safe. Have fun this Super Bowl weekend. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.